We're having our second class on the Jewish home. We discussed previously that our classes are specifically about marriage, not dating. We discussed that it's your responsibility to think about what to accept from these classes and where to apply it, if it's relevant in your case. We said that every home is slightly different, but there are certain things that apply in each home. We said that we should be open to seeing different homes, different approaches, and we should try to learn from the different homes we visit so that we can add to our repertoire of positive behaviors within a home. We said that what we study, we should try to find ways to apply with our fellow man, with our parents, to take these tools and start implementing them. We discussed the importance of taking notes because in the long run it's hard to remember all of these points. We discussed that most of your friends are going to get divorced. The statistic is that over 50% of marriages end up in divorce. That means it's something we really have to work on. If marriage is the best thing in the world, then it's also the hardest thing. Good things require a lot of investment. We discussed that marriage is what's going to affect our lives, our children, our happiness, our sense of satisfaction, our sense of inner peace, our growth in Torah and mitzvot, our connection with our fellow man, our connection with our own families, our capacity to deal with the hardships that life throws at us. So marriage is really the core of our life. And we said that although we looked up the dictionary definition of marriage being an agreement, in Judaism we say marriage is not just an agreement, but it is the beginning of the realization of man's role in the world. And that's where we discuss the correspondence between the first day of mourning and the first day of marriage, the first 3 days of mourning and the first 3 days of marriage, the first 7 days and the first 7 days, the first month, the first year versus the first year, where we have levels of celebration as opposed to levels of mourning, because these are the two ends, the two opposites. Marriage, we would say it's life and death, but no, it's marriage and death. Marriage is the beginning of life, death is the end of life. It's not the birth that's the beginning of life. It's with marriage that we really start our journey. We discussed Rav Elchanan Wasserman's eulogy of the Chazon Ish, of the Chafetz Chaim, where Rav Wasserman said that in the external world, man is gauged by his external accomplishments, and in Judaism, man is first gauged based on his accomplishments in the home. That comes first by us. And we mentioned the Zohar, that on Judgment Day, one's own wife will be the judge. That's Be'erech where we left off. Okay? I don't know. I heard it quoted. I don't know where it's written. I don't learn Zohar. I don't know. One of the greatest errors that abound in our society is this concept that there are good marriages and bad marriages. And you see those people, they just have it made. It works for them. And if my marriage isn't working, then I'm just not one of those lucky couples. And that's not true. There's no such thing as a couple that works on autopilot. Any couple that you see that it's going well by them, it has worked on it in the past and is working on it in the present. And if that's not the case, then their marriage isn't what you think it is. Either or. There's no in between. Marriage is hard. Marriage involves work. Marriage involves learning to act differently than is our nature. The nature of man and woman is to explode. You put the two in a house, it's not going to work. If man follows his nature and woman follows her nature, then the two will not succeed in building a house. There will not be harmony. Harmony is when I'm willing to learn to work according to her terms, she's willing to learn to work according to my terms, and we constantly work at getting together again. In the dating scene, you won't see it. Even couples that are non-observant, that live together, they can manage fine until they get married. Suddenly when we're really married, when we're really obligated to one another, when it's for real, suddenly there's fireworks. Because the nature of the connection is such that it can only work if I'm willing to be flexible, and flexible means where it's counterintuitive to me, where it's not so easy for me. So I'll give you one example, which we will discuss in a later class. You come home from work, and what you want now is to sit quietly with your wife for a cup of tea. And her idea of great bonding time is to sit down for a cup of tea and talk without end. So what does the average husband do? Pull out the newspaper, or turn on the TV or radio. Now, what are her needs and what are your needs? You walk through the door, you're happy having together time with few words. You walk through the door, she's been building up all day about 500 different topics that she just has to share with you. So you have patience for the first one, the erech. And then she reaches the second one. I didn't tell you yet what your daughter did to her new blouse. And you're standing there and you're thinking, I dealt with catastrophes out of the house. I came home, I have to deal with new catastrophes. And she's saying, like, you know, those new scissors we got her, which we made her promise she wouldn't take off the shelf without permission. Well, she experimented on her new blouse with them. You know, she's supposed to wear them for the wedding tomorrow night. So tomorrow morning, we have to go out and buy it. And you're thinking, wait, I understand we have problems. I just walked through the door. And it's only begun. You know, you try, you say, the first time I'm going to have patience. Yes, I'm listening. And you try to put on a smile. And you try to be listening and attentive and be with it. And then there's problem number two and problem number three. And the first rule you have to know is that when you finish your job at work, you're coming home to your second job at home. We have this imagined castle. I'm walking into the castle. I'll try to remember to bring you guys Reader's Digest or Good Housekeeping put out a thing in the 50s, what it means to be a good wife. I saw it on a magnet. I have to see if I can find it. Your husband comes home, have the children ready and clean and after their bath and quiet so that he could sit down quietly. You could see this is like a man's world, right? The woman is his servant. So you should know in Judaism it was never like that. If you look closely at the Shas, you will see that women repeatedly had an honorable stance in Judaism. And when the rabbis were concerned that the man wasn't respectable enough of the wife, so they added more clauses to the ksuba to make it more difficult for him to ever think about divorce, to realize that you're in it for life. This is you got to make it work, and you got to be respectful as you make it work. So making marriage work is probably the most difficult task you have in life. It's the most meaningful task you have in life. It is probably the most long-term investment you ever have. I once said jokingly, and then I stopped and I thought about it, and ever since then I've been saying it not jokingly. It went like this. They came out with MP3 players. I bought an MP3 player, and I was able to listen to Shiurim every free minute of the day. I was amazed. For the first time in my life, I used to listen to a tape recorder, but you know, you have 60 minutes, 90 minutes on a cassette. So there's a limit to how much Torah you could listen to. Suddenly, I could be riding out to Tel Aviv and back and listening to four shiurim. So I made the mistake of buying it from some Chinese company off of eBay. And the warranty lasted 30 days. And on day 31, it died. So I told my wife, you know, this was such an amazing investment. Even though it died on day 31... I learned so much Torah from this machine. I couldn't have imagined how much Torah you could learn. And I was about to say, it's the best investment I made in my life, even though it died. And as I'm looking down at the machine, I see my wife's hand in the wedding ring. And I caught myself and I said, it's the second best investment I ever made in my life. And ever since then, I always say, my best investment was that ring. And it's true. It's true. If there's one investment that you're going to go with your whole life, it's like investing in your own life. The best investment, the most important investment you will ever make is that wedding ring. That's the most important investment. Everything else is irrelevant. Everything else is not second or third. It's way down the line. It's like a question of life or not life. This is your partner. This is all of life. But you know what? We don't think of it that way. You're reading an article and your wife wants to tell you something. You say, just a second, honey. Does that article matter? Who cares? If the electricity would black out and the article would die, you wouldn't say, I can't wait for the electricity to go back on. I got to read that article. No, it doesn't really matter. But your wife does. And we forget that. We repeatedly forget that. Adam was given his wife. And we know the story. She fed him the forbidden fruit. And what does Adam say to God? He says, "Aisha shenatata imadi, hi natena li min ha'etz va'ochel." That woman you put here, she fed me that fruit. You see, within a day, the first day of marriage, Adam already takes Eve for granted. And that is the eternal weakness that man has, to take that blessing for granted. Look at it, the day he got her. Poor man, he lived in a world all alone. We can't imagine what loneliness that must have been. Until finally God creates a woman, and he wakes up from his slumber and he looks at her, and wow, what a gift! This isn't like us, where we date, and then we finally choose one, and in the back of our mind we keep thinking, there are others. Right? We don't like to say it, but it's sitting there. It's wrong. We're going to discuss that today. Adam had no one else. This was God's gift to him. He had no room to wonder, is she my Bashert? Is this the one God had in mind for me? It was very clear. Right? No questions. And yet, a few hours into their marriage, he can turn on her and say, she made me do it. It's all her. It tells us something about us. It tells us something about the state of the male mind. So that's one of our challenges throughout life, to remember how precious and how treasured this beautiful gift that we were given, how treasured it is. And it doesn't come easy. Again, our second nature is to take it for granted. Not only take it for granted, but have a million reasons why she is so lucky I'm putting up with her. So we're going to discuss all of that. But let's begin again. There's this common mistake that people think there are those successful couples and they have it easy. Wrong. No one has it easy. Marriage is the most beautiful, the most worthwhile investment you will make in your life. And it's something you have to build. It is hard, but it is worthwhile. Again, the most worthwhile, the sweetest and the best. But it involves a lot of hard work. If you're ready to get married, that means you're ready to work. We think we're ready to get married because I'm ready to have a wife, do my laundry. Come on, I'm tired of doing it in the machon. And anyways, the machon food, well, and I'm really being modest because the Talmud says everyone gets married because we all have a yearning for intimacy. So man is getting married and his thoughts are on what's going to happen that night. Okay, that's normal. You're supposed to have a desire to be with someone of the opposite gender. That's normal. That's fine. But marriage is about so much more than that. So we have to be prepared to work. Now, what generally happens when you get engaged? So you've met the girl, you've decided to get engaged. And let's imagine you're a student at Machon Meir or Merkaz Arav or anywhere else, and you come and tell me you've gotten engaged. So I say, Mazel Tov, I bring you into the office, and I say, I'm so happy. Who's the girl? Where's she from? That's great. Do you regret it yet? Because 95% of men and women that get engaged regret it. What happens is during the engagement period, a person is suddenly engulfed with doubt. What?
Sees their life flash before their eyes?
No. People are engulfed with doubt. So,
buyer's remorse.
What?
Buyer's remorse.
I don't think it's buyer's remorse. I think it runs deeper than that. There are a few reasons for it. I wasn't going to address that, but if you want.
Yeah.
Okay. there is a male weakness to always think there are better girls out there. Every man has a hard time getting engaged because somewhere in the recesses of his mind, he imagines that there's a better other out there. And even when a person's married, a person can very easily think that he'd be so much better off with the neighbor's wife, with his best friend's wife, with that other girl he dated. So we're not, no one likes to say that. But this is a very common cause. That's one reason, and we will discuss that at greater length. Okay, if we mentioned it, so we'll take a minute on that. Out of modesty, we should be careful when we're married, not to walk around showing everyone how great married life is. It's no one's business. If you're happy with your marriage, that's great for you. You don't have to go telling everyone. Here's what will often happen. Let's play it from the woman's side, okay? You're a wonderful husband. You're very caring. You wake up in the morning. You make your wife a cup of tea. Before you leave the house, you take out the garbage. You leave her a nice note in her wallet, how much you love her and how you can't wait to see her again at night. You get to work. You're very nice. You call home. You leave a message on the answering machine telling her how you miss her already. In the middle of the day, you send her an SMS. You ask her how her day is. On your way home, you go to the store. You do the shopping. You carry home all the groceries. You come home. You put it away. You don't leave it for her to put away. You notice that the floor needs mopping. You mop the floor. You prepare breakfast for the kids for tomorrow. You prepare the lunches. Again, you take out the garbages that are full. You notice one of the kids filled a diaper in the middle of their sleep. You change the diaper. You put on the diaper cream. You're a good husband. You're a nice guy. That's great. But here's what's been happening all day. Your wife has been talking to her friends, and one friend tells her, I can't believe you take the kids to school. My husband takes the kids. He'd never let me carry the kids to school. So your wife says, well, my husband does a lot of other nice things, she thinks to herself, and she hangs up the phone. And then she calls her sister, and her sister says, my husband makes lunch. He doesn't leave me to slave in the middle of a hot day making lunch for the kids. And your wife thinks, my husband does a lot of other nice things, and hangs up the phone. And then she calls another friend, and that other friend says, well, my husband comes, visits me at work. He won't let a whole day go by without the two of us meeting up. And she's thinking, well, he left me a nice note this morning. She calls up a fourth friend, and her friend says, you won't believe it. My husband didn't come home from work without flowers and ice cream for us to share. And by now, it's already eating a little bit at her. Now, you walk through the door, and you happen to look in the pot, and you see she made pasta. So you ask her, do we have any pasta left? And she says to you, you're going to tell me I'm using up the pasta? You don't take me out for lunch. You don't come home with flowers and ice cream. And you're looking, what did I do? I just asked, you know? And suddenly everything she's heard all day comes out at you. Why? Because every friend she's speaking to is just touching on another button, saying, you know, my husband, none of the other husbands do half of what you're doing. They just do one thing, which they happen to mention in a phone conversation. But in her mind, every husband is doing everything she just heard, except for hers. Now, I said it about the wife, because that you'll understand better. But it goes the other way, too. You see the neighbor, and in their house it's always clean, and in their house it's always spotless. You schlep out the garbage. The neighbor's wife is certainly fine with taking out the garbage. You could look at it, this is what happens if we're going to start looking. So that's one of the reasons. One of the reasons is that people give themselves this license to think about things that they shouldn't allow themselves to think about. It's lies. It's really, like I said, each one has their strengths and weaknesses, and this is the one that works for you and is right for you. But no, there is. Like the guy who said, I want the perfect wife. And I was thinking, you have to be the perfect guy to get the perfect wife, because otherwise you're not going to be good for her. But what you need is the perfect wife for you. You know? It's got to match for you. So it's the truth. If I were perfect, then I'd need Mrs. Perfect. I'm not perfect, so I need who's perfect for me. So, coming back to the point at hand. When a person gets engaged, it's very natural. Almost everyone at some point has this doubt. Maybe this wasn't right. So there's this kala sitting on the kala chair. The chassan went, he came and did the badek, and he pulled down the veil over her head, and he went down to the chuppah. He's already waiting under the awning, under the canopy, waiting for her to come down. Everyone's standing, singing and dancing and clapping and waiting for her to get up off the throne. And they're standing there for a minute, and for 2 minutes, and for 5 minutes, and for 10 minutes, and she's not getting off her kala's throne. She's sitting there, chuckling over her prayer. And you know, they're getting a little tired, singing and dancing there. So her best friend leans over, and her best friend says, Javi, what's wrong? So she says to her, Esti, should I go or not? So Esti says, Javi, of course you should go. You love him. So she looks up and says, thanks. And gets up and starts walking down the aisle. So Javi's walking down the aisle to the chuppah, and everyone's dancing and singing. And Esti goes over to a corner and says, what did I just do? I just told her who to marry. How could I do that? If she had second thoughts, who was I to tell her to marry him? And she hears her walking down the aisle. And she goes to the corner and pulls out her tehillim and says, Ribbono Shel Olam, forgive me. How could I have done that? So she starts praying. And as she's praying, she hears them going around 1, 2, 3 times. Everyone's singing as the kala goes around. And now she stands and they're honoring them. Sadir Chuppah and Kiddushin. And every word they're saying is like a dagger in her heart. And she's standing there. Mimamakim krosicha Hashem, from the depths of my heart, I call to you, Hashem, what have I done? Forgive me. Everyone's singing and dancing, and she's praying. Hare at mekudeshet li. Those words never sounded longer. And everyone calls out mekudeshet. She is hereby legally betrothed. And she breaks down into tears. She's sobbing there, praying her head off. Sheva brachos. They dance. They lead them out to the cheder yichud. The couple is sitting there alone. Everyone goes off to eat. And poor Esti is standing in the corner davening. The couple comes out of the cheder yichud, and she turns around, her face covered with tears, and she looks at her friend who calls her over and tells her, I don't know how to thank you. I had one moment of weakness. You saved my life. And then she could dance the rest of the wedding. True story. Oh, yeah. I could tell you another story. I walk into the following story. I have permission from the person to tell you the story. I walked into this guy's house and I see this huge picture right opposite the front door in their living room. A picture of him smiling, walking out of the chuppah towards his kala. You see this bride climbing the steps to the chuppah, and him walking out with this huge smile. And he tells me, I'm going to tell you a story now you could tell over in the class. The story behind this picture. What's the story? He tells me he comes under the chuppah, they dated, they got engaged, everything was great. Until he stood under the chuppah. He stood under the chuppah and suddenly everything hit him like a ton of bricks. He said to himself, what am I doing here? And he looks down the aisle and he sees the kala walking. And he says to himself, can I hit the pause button? Can I just think this through for 1 second? And she's walking and he's trying to think it through and he can't. And he asks himself, what would happen if I say I have to go to the restroom for a second? I've never seen a chassan do this, but they can't hold that against me. And she's walking. And he closes his eyes and he tries to think, am I doing the right thing here? I can't figure this out. And she's walking and he stops and he can't get clarity. And he's thinking to himself, why am I doing this? And if I'm going to call this off, I should do this now. Right now she's a virgin. She's not divorced. We've never been married. Why should we go through with this? And then afterwards, for her whole life, you know, it's one thing to break an engagement. It's another thing to get divorced. Could we hit the pause button and she's advancing? He looks to his left, his right, his parents, his rabbeim, everyone's there. Who can he ask? What's he supposed to do? So he closes his eyes. And he tries to get a moment of clarity. And he can't. And then he thinks to himself and he says, okay, I can't figure out right now if this is the best choice. But it's not the worst choice. If I had to choose someone to make it work with, I can make it work with her. And he says, he throws up a prayer. He says, Rabbono Shel Olam, till today the Jewish people have the merits of Rachel, who wouldn't embarrass her sister under the chuppah, right? Rachel gave her sister the secret sign, so Yaakov Avinu wouldn't recognize that he's being tricked, and then she'd be embarrassed under the chuppah. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think this can work, and I'm not going to embarrass this girl here. And it's up to you. Help me out. And with that, he opens his eyes and puts on a huge fake smile and walks out of the chuppah to greet his kala. And the photographer takes a picture. And again, once they left the cheder yichud, the nerves calmed down. He regained his clarity and he was very happy he did what he did. But he knew that smile was fake. He was doing it to make her feel good. But she doesn't know that till today. And that's her favorite picture. She always tells everyone, look at how happy he was that he merited to marry me. So he never told her this part of the story, but he gave me permission to tell you guys. So at any rate, I changed enough facts. Eliezer, don't worry, I changed enough facts that it won't, no one will ever connect the story, but this doubt, this lingering doubt, does not end when you walk out of the chuppah. It is enemy number one of marriage. Very often people within marriage will start asking themselves, did I make the right move? Did I marry the right person? And if we don't decide, I married the right person and now we're going to make it work, then marriage cannot last. Because every day there are an infinitesimal amount of little things that we do that are not considerate enough of our spouse. As much as we try, there are little things that we do that we should let slide. But if I'm holding an accounting book open and I'm asking myself, is it worth it? Is it right? The answer will never be yes. If you're asking yourself, should I be married to this person? The answer will never be yes. Because if I'm gauging everything, then every second I'm going to have another little thing that's getting on my nerves. The truth is that the answer will always be yes. Because if we would have a real vantage point on all the amazing, wonderful things that are going on a daily basis in this partnership, in this beautiful connection called marriage, then the gains outweigh the losses tenfold. But us men are so blind. We miss so much of the good. And it's not only men. I'm just talking to men. So I'm telling you men. But the truth is women miss it too. There are so many phenomenal benefits and blessings that come with marriage. We miss them all. I know many people that got divorced. And of course, people say all kinds of things. Oh, finally I'm free, and this, that, and the other thing. I can tell you that most people really, really regret it. Oh, they get remarried, and they try to rebuild it, and they try to make a better life. But at the end of the day, when people get divorced, they almost never fully appreciate what they're losing with the divorce. How much good they have within the marriage, with all the hardships. With all the hardships. So there's tremendous benefit within the marriage that we overlook. And if we're taking an accounting, if we are willing to fall into that trap, and again, it's mind over matter. You have to decide to decide. And I'll end with a personal story. My wife and I got married. We walked into the Yichud room. It was a snowy night here in Jerusalem. And we got married in a hall that was not prepared for such a cold night. They put a coil radiator into the room. We're sitting down to eat the first time we've eaten today, right? And her dress touches the coils and goes up in flames. Okay, so we're in the Yichud room. I put out the fire. So, good old Netanel, what's the first thought that comes to my mind? The Talmud says, Ish v'isha. Man and woman, their letters are composed of the words Eish, fire. If they merit, then you have the yud and the hey in their names, God's presence in their midst. If they don't merit, then they get consumed by fire. That's a line in Talmud. So I'm sitting there with my wife in the yichud room. I didn't say a word. I'm sitting there with my wife in the yichud room. I put out the fire, and the first thought that comes to my mind is, Ish ve'isha zachu shechina b'neihem. Lo zachu. And I'm sitting there looking at the fire, mustering a smile, telling my wife, are you okay? And I'm thinking, this is not okay. It's not over yet. So I said to myself, you're not going to think about this. Okay? You're not a superstitious person. Everything else made sense. You're going to go on with the wedding and everything's fine and these things happen. Great. We're going to be careful. Okay? We come home that night. You don't get to eat too much at a wedding. Right? Everyone's telling you mazel tov. You barely get to eat or drink. So we sit down to eat and drink something, and we turn on a heater. Now, this was a new kind of heater. It didn't look like it had coils. We're sitting down to eat, and I'm telling myself, don't think about it. And 2 minutes later, there's a fire again. So now this happened the second time. When it comes to sakana, things of danger, we say two is a chazaka. Okay? But this isn't the sakana. This is just, you know, my mind working out the Talmud. And again, I forced myself. I said, you're not thinking about this. This is not... I didn't tell my wife these thoughts till we were married a decade. It was only after we were married a decade that I told you, you know what happened that night? You know what was going through my mind in the yichud room? So... sometimes, after 10 years, you could laugh. Yeah, I didn't tell her earlier. I wouldn't tell you if I hadn't told her already, right?
Did she find it funny? Or was she like, oh, yes.
Well, we weren't laughing because it was a rented gown. It cost a lot of money to pay back. I'm saying that was the not funny part of it. But I'm just saying we sometimes find superstitious reasons, religious reasons why maybe in Shemaim this wasn't meant to be. No. We have to decide... and stand by that decision, and it's mind over matter. We have to decide, I am not considering this. This was the right decision, and now I'm going to make it work. That's a decision, and the sooner a person decides to decide, the sooner they can start having a beautiful marriage. Because you cannot deal with the issues that marriage involves when you're also dealing with the question, hey, maybe this was a mistake. No marriage can live up to that question. Because then, like we said, the answer that stares you in the face is this was a wrong decision. The real answer is it was a right decision, but that's not what you sense at the moment.